in addition to our panelists, who, of course, we're going to hear from and introduce in just a minute, we have, as always, a host of incredible guests here from different sectors, including other alder folk, alders, that are not on the panel, that I hope will come and join us for a future panel, a future discussion. So please join me in welcoming back to the City Club Alderman Monique Scott, Alderman Derek Curtis, Alderman Andre Vasquez, and if I missed any that were not on our list, please stand up or wave. Okay. Oh, he snuck in the back. Quesada, thank you. Alderman Quesada, thank you, Fernando. Your jobs are incredibly important, especially right now, and we all appreciate all this effort that goes into what you're doing, and look forward to hearing more about it, like I said, from these panelists today, but hope to continue this discussion with so many of you others that are joining us in the room. Also, it's important to recognize that we've got this cross-sector of interesting folks and public servants, especially Inspector General Deborah Witzberg is here. The Irish Council General Brian Cahalan is here. Brian, welcome back. The chair of the RTA, Kirk Dillard, is here. Thank you, Chair. Brenda Bowie from the Library Foundation and a crew from the foundation doing so many great things. Thank you, Brenda. Clayco's Michael Fosnock is here. Michael, Marilyn Rubio, and the Clayco team, we always appreciate your attendance and support. Jackie Gomez is here, another speaker. And she's sitting next to Marilyn Gardner, CEO of Navy Pier. Thank you, Marilyn. I think David Doig is here from CNI. Julian Federley from Amazon is here. Pat Carey, John Dunn from Cozen O'Connor. Jill Jaworski's here also, the CFO for the City of Chicago. And I know that her partner in all of this is on her way, Annette Guzman. I'm going to mention her because they're clearly very busy right now. But Annette is coming, and we appreciate them being a part of this discussion as it is hopefully going to help move the ball forward on whatever happens next with our city's budget. So thank you all. David Walsh is here. We've got such a great group of people. We appreciate you taking time out of your day. I see Rachel Dame from American. I see Chris Anderson from United. We got both airlines here. I could go and do this all day, but I want to get right to this panel. And to introduce this panel, I hope you'll join me in welcoming our host aldermen. Now, we don't have favorite aldermen. I have my own aldermen. We have City Club's aldermen. The alderman of this ward, the second ward, is a great public servant. He's a big fan of City Club. He comes here often to learn, to share his voice, to help make this city better, and I'm so proud to have him here to just introduce some of his colleagues and set the stage for this great conversation. Please join me in welcoming Second Ward Alderman Brian Hopkins. And again, please have questions ready. I'm going to come back here and help facilitate, but we might be able to get into the audience, so keep those questions coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks, Dan. Yes, and thanks for mentioning, as Jackie said, I am a member of City Club.
So and we appreciate that.
One of the titles I'm proud of. And thank you, Dan Gibbons and City Club, for doing this. This is an important discussion, an important topic at an important time. But I do want to acknowledge that it was scheduled several weeks ago, and the intention was to have this discussion on the day before the dramatic showdown vote in the city council, yes or no, up or down on the budget. Lesson one in budgeting, be careful what predictions you make. because it doesn't always go the way you think it's going to. So we will not have an up or down vote tomorrow as we originally anticipated, but that does not in any way diminish the importance of the discussion that we're going to have here today. So again, City Club, thank you for doing it. Lesson two in budgeting is embodied by a cartoon from The New Yorker that I clipped out years ago. It's on the wall in my office. It's a newly elected official at some government somewhere showing up for his first committee meeting, and he has a perplexed look on his face, and he's raising his hand. He says, "I was told there'd be no math." Folks, there's math, all right? It's inherent in the budgeting process. However, I think this is an important point. You don't have to be a CPA, an accountant, to engage in the budgeting process. Now, we do have a member of the panel who is a CPA today, and we're grateful for him, and I'll get to that in a minute. But a budget at its core is not a spreadsheet full of debits, credits, formulas, and math. It is an expression of policy and political priorities, which we all have, regardless of what our background is. It's a quantitative expression of the priorities that we bring to government, that we try to make a difference across the board in every way possible. And for all of us, I think I can speak for all of my colleagues here in the midst of this political and policy disagreement that we're having. I think I can speak for all of my colleagues when I say it is by far the most labor-intensive task of the year for all of us. You have to bring your A game to the budget process. Even in today's paperless society, I keep track of all the budget documents. I stack them up on my desk, and they're currently about there, right? So the reports, the documents, everything that's produced, we have to read it all. Mostly we do. And we engage in this process with the effort that is commensurate to what is actually at stake here. And that's my next point. It is the most consequential decision that we make as aldermen and as mayors and as other elected officials. The ramifications of the decision that we make continue on throughout all aspects of government, and we know that. Instinctively, we know that. That's why we get so passionate about it. That's why we bring our A game, because it matters. And I'll give you one example of that. If you ever see me on the Orange Line, you'll notice I'm gazing thoughtfully out the window. You might wonder, what am I thinking about? I'm thinking about the war in Nicaragua back in the 80s. Why? Well, because the Orange Line wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the war in Nicaragua. That was a policy priority for President Reagan at the time, but we had a Democratic-controlled Congress. He needed two more Democratic votes for a budget amendment to fund the Contra rebels in the war in Nicaragua. Enter Congressman William Lipinski. He got that one vote that he needed, and Congresswoman Lipinski got $20 million to build the Orange Line. Now, you'd never see those two are connected. I see the Inspector General taking notes. Is that, can they do that? I don't know. The truth is, we do it. It's part of the legislative log rolling process that infuses every budget debate. Like it or not, it's part of government because it's part of human nature. And that is happening today, by the way. Now, we're so grateful to the City Club and the other entities that allow us to take the politics out of it, however briefly, because it is a political debate, but it's a policy debate also. And the City Club specializes in that, as does the Commercial Club in Chicago, the Civic Federation, some of the other groups. We as elected officials need that because we make better decisions when we can balance the politics with the policy. And today, I know my four colleagues who I'm about to introduce will temporarily suspend the political wrangling, and we're going to put on our policy wonk hats, and we're going to dig into the key questions that surround this budget debate and hopefully bring some solutions. Now, had the budget vote taken place tomorrow as it was scheduled, I think I can confidently say that our panel would have split 2 yes, 2 no. I'm not going to tell you who's who. I'll let them do it. But that wheel is very much in spin. A lot's going to happen between now and when that final budget vote does get taken. So listen carefully. Listen carefully to both the positions that you're going to hear and the open minds that my four colleagues will bring to this debate. Because we're seeking solutions, you have to be as open as possible to find them. I want to start by introducing the chairman of the budget process and give him a well-earned round of applause for the way he's led this process so far. Jason Urban. who is in fact a CPA, also a former city manager. So he not only knows how to craft a budget once a year, he knows how to spend it 365 days a year.
The next alderman I want to introduce is a lawyer, Sam Nugent, who is a member of the budget committee.
She is also a representative of her ward in a way that all of us aspire to. I look at Sam, I see every working mom in Forest Glen. She represents her community, represents her neighborhood in just an outstanding way. As I mentioned, she's a lawyer by trade. She's also a member of the budget committee. And importantly, she is the president pro tem of the city council, which means she has a floating vote, which she used recently in a very dramatic way to break a tie. The next alderman from the 19th Ward, Matt O'Shea, chairman of the Aviation Committee. That's important because the Aviation Committee has an enterprise fund. It's the only aspect of government in Chicago that not only pays for itself with the revenue that the airports generate, but it actually has a surplus. So I wish we could do that in every aspect of government. I wish we could make more money from all the other things we do. But aviation does provide that function. And Matt is a member of both the Finance and the Budget Committee, so he has double influence over the outcome of the budget. And finally, Alderman Jesse Fuentes, member of the Progressive Caucus. She brings a social justice activist perspective to the budget process. She is not on the budget committee. She is on my public safety committee. She's a member of the committee that I chair and does an outstanding job, really leads with her heart. And represents the community quite well. So, Jesse, glad you're here today. So with that, I will turn it over to our City Club president once again, Dan Gibbons, to facilitate this very spirited debate. Dan, take it from here.
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you, Alderman Hopkins. And I just want to mention he helped think this through and kind of map this out. We clearly have the best of the best. I made a little backroom deal with him that maybe if we don't have you on the panel, because we want to have him solo speaking about a couple very important things. So there's more to come on that soon. We always like to share this stage with as many people as possible. So thank you, Brian, for making this happen and for that great introduction. Thank you all. You're very busy people. So we appreciate you being here. I'm going to stand here and turn a little bit and ask Alderman Irvin. Alderman Irvin's the chair of the Budget Committee. So as many of you know, some of you may not know the intricacies of this. So I'm going to ask Alderman Irvin to just explain where we stand now in this process and what has come to be and what is next to just kind of set the stage for then a discussion about how we can expect to see the next month or so play out. So Alderman Irvin, thank you again for those efforts and for your leadership on this. And if you could, just give us a little overview.
Thank you, Dan, for having us here. I also want to welcome our budget director, Annette Guzman, who's been able to join us. This is a classic case of an impasse. We have a body of individuals who support the budget. We have a body of individuals who do not support the budget. And we are at what I would consider to be a classic impasse. And this is where the rubber meets the road and we have to begin to make some decisions, to make some positive people will like, some won't like. I do anticipate, though, that we will not allow government to shut down as what has happened in Washington. I believe the members of the city council will come together on a plan. We may not all like the plan, but we will come together on a plan that's going to keep Chicago moving, keep the services that our citizens are looking for to continue. And at the same time, as Alderman Hopkins talked about, it is an expression of policy. It is an expression of values and is an expression of everything. And he is correct. You do not need to be a mathematician to understand budgeting. One good thing I like about this council, we have a wide ideological spectrum. We have a wide educational spectrum. So we touch just about everybody you may want to see in our city. And those things are expressed in everyone's decisions and in their values. So right now, I'll say we're at an impasse. We've got roughly 30 some odd days to get something done. I do not believe we will go run the clock totally out. I think that mid-December, we will have a crafted budget. Again, I'm sure there'll be some people that like what happens, and there'll be some that do not like what happens. But again, at the end of the day, we want to preserve services and everything that people need for the city of Chicago.
Okay, and we'll get, I think we'll get into more of that, what's next in the conversation. Alderman Nugent, if you could, and I think we can go down the line with this, just to start off, maybe tell us, what's your priority here? You know, what in this process and in this budget, what is most important to you? And then I think we can come back to some more specifics.
Sure. Good afternoon, everyone. And of course, Dan and thank you for having us. And of course, Alderman Hopkins, thanks for the kind opening. You know, when we look at this budget, you know, I think council said at the Finance Committee earlier this week, we have grave concerns and we need to start over, or we need to go back to the well. For me and my community and a lot of my colleagues, we don't want to see a budget pass that's going to kill jobs. We want to ensure that folks want to invest in the city, and we want to make sure that we're preserving essential services and ensuring that we have police officers. I think that's at high level what people are really asking us for. I think there's a way to get there, and I agree with my colleague, Chairman Irvin, that we have a lot of different folks with different ideologies on the council, but at the end of the day, we will find a budget, and we're going to get there. But we're going to have to, we have to look internally. We have to look at ourselves as the city before we come out to you, Chicagoans and taxpayers, and say we want more fees and fines, and we want to pass measures that are going to encourage businesses to go elsewhere. And I won't be comfortable supporting a budget until we look internally and make more cuts.
Okay.
What do you want to cut? What do you want to cut?
We can go there, but I mean, do we want
we'll get into it. Let's get into it. And let's give Alderman O'Shea a minute, and then we'll come back to it.
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for having me here today. I agree with much of what my colleague Alderman Nugent said. I just want to start out by saying there's many people that have been engaged in this process, but not everybody has been engaged in this process. I'm going to say something uncomfortable up here. Labor needs to be at the table. We are at a financial crossroads for the future of our city. And some people talk about the head tax being the best answer. I personally feel that's a job killer. That stunts growth. That's going to drive businesses out of our city. It's going to prevent businesses from moving to our city. The very people we need to create jobs would stop investing, stop expanding, ultimately leaving the city, possibly our state. I think we need to look more internally at what more we can do. Now, the mayor gave this budget proposal 5 weeks ago yesterday. And technically, we need to have a budget 6 weeks from today. So we're almost at halftime. And for 5 weeks, we've been talking about the same thing. The head tax, the head tax, the head tax. I really think we need to get back and get a closer look at things and try to identify where there could be waste. And before anybody says anything, it's $1 billion-plus hole. It's a almost $17 billion budget. Does anybody think 30 departments across the city of Chicago can identify more duplicity in departments, more efficiencies in departments, and dare I say it, some cuts on some level? That's what we need to do. Everything needs to be on the table. Everybody needs to have skin in the game. Thank you.
Thanks. Alderman Puente.
Thank you. Look, I politely disagree with my colleagues. And I also want to say, look, trying to fill a $1.15 billion deficit requires shared sacrifice. I think that everyone in this room can say that, right? But we also have to look at the shared sacrifice that we have seen over and over in our city. I spent 10 years in education prior to becoming an elected official. I remember when 50 schools closed across our city, and so did mental health clinics. I remember the mass layoffs that we seen a little over 7 years ago. I also remember the cuts to services and the impact that it had in our community. Let's just talk about gender-based violence. We disinvested from many programs, and we seen the highest increase in gender-based violence in the city of Chicago this last year. When we're talking about efficiencies, we've asked that of departments already. We have departments who are sharing cost savings through the freezing of positions that we won't hire for in this upcoming year. We've looked at those middle management positions. My fear is if we keep talking about efficiencies, we're talking about the cuts to services. That can possibly be youth employment. That can possibly be violence intervention. That can possibly be grant dollars to gender-based violence. And community safety in the city of Chicago is much more than policing. And look, I admire the work of Superintendent Snelling. But we know in this city, we have to do much more than that. The community safety surcharge, we're not asking for businesses to write a blank check. It's earmarked so that we can look at the dollars that we are spending in our community and how that's going to ensure that businesses can be successful here. A lot of the concerns that I hear from businesses in my community, and I represent the 26th Ward on the Northwest side, represent communities like Humble Park, Logan Square, Westtown, Hermosa, Belmont, Cragen, where we see the spikes of gun violence not just impact families and traumatize young people, but we see how that impacts small business owners when they have to deal with smash and grabs and put up money to be able to repair themselves from that event. It's important that we're investing in ensuring that we can decrease those levels of crime so that businesses are not putting up those dollars to have to deal with what crime does, not just to them as a business, but to our entire ecosystem. You know, earlier I said shared sacrifice. This budget requires us to think about who's going to sacrifice in this moment. What we're asking is for folks who have that shared that shared love for Chicago to want us to be the safest and best city. And I think when we say that this is going to be a job killer, people are going to move out, I think we're not thinking about just how great we are. And that folks want to be here because we have such a talented pool of workers, because we have a great city of people who represent the entire globe, 77 neighborhoods representing the world in the city. You go up north, you feel a little India. You go to Little Village, you feel a little piece of Mexico. You go to Humble Park, you feel a little piece of Puerto Rico. People want to be in the city of Chicago, and I think we can't forget that in this moment.
That's evidence in all these folks in this room, by the way, care very much about this. Okay, so if the head tax, I think there are two questions. Is the head tax dead? And we keep talking about the head tax, so let's not spend too much time on it. But is that completely dead? Is that revived? Is it going to be cut in half? Is it? No. And then what I'd like to do, go ahead.
No, I'm going to say no. I will say no because the mayor has indicated that he would veto anything that did not have such, that also included a property tax increase, a garbage fee increase. So when the mayor indicates that he's going to veto something, that brings the threshold required to pass something to a hyper level of 34 votes. And I can tell you that there are at least 17 people that will stand against some of the items that are being brought to the table. I will say this. And let's take a step back here, and I want to address one thing that Alderman O'Shea stated. While our budget in its totality is $17 billion, it deals with our enterprise funds, our fiduciaries, all the other funds. The core service fund, which is our corporate fund, is about $6 billion. So when we apply a $1.2 billion deficit to a fund of $5 to $6 billion, that number is very great. At the end of the day, what we find is that we have ultimately a revenue issue. When you look at the decline in revenues that the city has received from the state of Illinois in the point of our income and personal property replacement taxes, if you look at those two items right there on its own and take everything else out of the equation, we're pretty much there. I mean, the city has lost $400 million from the state in the past couple of years without any explanation. And again, they had budget holes, but now they don't. And it leads me to believe, why is it that cities, not just the city of Chicago, but cities all across the state are dealing with the same issue? Yesterday, I was one of my staff people. We looked at his mother's tax bill. The tax rate in Park Forest, Illinois is 23%. 23%. Our rate in the city of Chicago is a little over 6%. And so municipalities across the state are seeing the same thing, which is declining revenues coming from the state, which, again, we increased our income taxes. We saw no money from that. Increased the PPRT. We saw no money from that. And again, these are taxes that we as citizens and businesses are paying. But in many cases, those are declining on businesses. And in this, and we talk about the head tax, essentially is a replacement for PPRT that should have been paid along the way. Now, how did we get to PPRT? Because I think that's another question that people may not understand. The city of Chicago and other cities throughout the state of Illinois had varying rates throughout the state. And now the state steps up and says, hey, we're going to take this on ourselves and then we're going to give you guys money back. But every year that money has continued to decline. And again, we have a city where we have to, you know, I don't see anybody, you know, take a pay cut or do anything like that. We've got, you know, still have to provide services. Our costs are going up on an annual basis, but our revenues from the state are beginning to decline. Therein, this gap continues to be created. And so we have to understand that we need some reform in Springfield, number one. We need to make sure that every municipality in the state, not just the city of Chicago, is receiving its fair share of all of the revenues that have been garnered. And again, the only bailout that came, I mean, where's Kirk Dillard? He got a bailout, so with a good chunk of money. But I mean, again, necessary in the like, but the state really has to step up to help not just the city of Chicago, but municipalities across the state, because they continue to claw back revenue that otherwise ends up on property tax bills of our constituents and residents throughout the city and state.
Well, let's talk about that. We need help from Springfield. Mm-hmm. So let's put together a strong lobbying team. There's a few in the room here right now. But no, what did we do? We picked a former alderman who had very little relationships in the city council and even less in Springfield. Yeah, it didn't take long. I'm sorry. And then we've got members of the city council getting in the face of the governor at events a week ago. So we need the governor and we need Springfield. I don't care what anybody in this room thinks about the governor, but he's the governor. And last I checked, they had pretty high polling numbers. In fact, he's a presidential candidate in 3 years. And we keep taking swings at him. We keep popping off in the media. And who do we send down to Springfield to advocate for us, to advocate for you? Someone with no lobbying experience and no relationships. And the many things that we could have received help on for this budget, we got nothing.
You're talking about one person out of a team of 7 or 8 people. I mean, there are people who have been in Springfield representing the city for a number of years. What's the guy? I can't remember his name. I'm serious.
I'll jump in here. I don't know the name.
Not really. The same. Some of the same people have been in Springfield representing the city of Chicago for a number of years. We can't lay this blame on Alderman Arena as one individual who just recently joined the team. I mean, we've got state reps, we have state senators, and we should be in communication with them as they're deliberating and doing their various duties at the state legislature. We can't lay all of this on Governor Pritzker. We can't lay this all on the mayor. Again, this is something that is
on behalf of the city. You should deliver this message to the building.
So just real quick, because I know you're going to move us along, and you should. Here's the reality, is that the rest of the state is not successful without the city of Chicago. Every municipality in this state depends on our city to also move their municipal governments forward. So whether we have a robust, talented IGA team going to Springfield is not the beginning or the end of what our relationship should look like with our state legislators. The reality is that there's mayors all across the state that need the city of Chicago to perform well. That means that we should be Springfield's priority. And so we have to continue having the discussion about how state legislators are prioritizing our city, whether they represent us or not in this moment.
I don't think anyone's going to disagree. Sam, I think you're, do you have anything to add?
I worked in intergovernmental affairs for some people sitting in this room in mayor's offices. I should have or would have been fired if I was this bad at my job. I mean, we're the third biggest city in the country, and I don't think we've ever been given what our Springfield agenda is. We, you know, as Alderman O'Shea said, we were critical of the governor.
We're going to build a football stadium.
I mean, I just, listen, and this isn't about politics. This is literally, we're hurting in Chicago. We're hurting, and we need business to want to be here. We are a world-class city. We have the best academic institutions. We have museums. We have art. We have culture. We have business. But we are not communicating with the governor of our state. We do not have a legislative agenda. We don't know what we're asking for when we're down there, and we're sure not getting it. And if you take all that aside, we need the relationships. We need the relationships. We need to be able to have stakeholder engagement, and we need to be able to get money back in the city, which we deserve it. But the way that we've been pursuing this agenda does not reflect a city that we are.
So, all right, I appreciate everyone's in agreement. We need more from Springfield, right? So we don't have a position on this at City Club, but I'll mention it next time the governor's here. Okay, let's get – so we just keep talking about reality. So if here we are, we need that from Springfield. We're not going to get it anytime real soon, right? That's a whole process. This budget is in 1 month. If the head tax is gone or diminished – they're really, and I don't mean to lead you, but there seems to me like two options: cuts and probably property taxes. Alderman Irvin, you asked your colleague, what would you cut? Let's go there for a minute. What would you cut? These are hard decisions, but you got to get to a balanced budget at some point. So what could be cut?
I have,
and I'll let anybody take that.
I have consistently asked my colleagues, what is it that they wish to cut? Is it you want to take garbage service to every other week? We asked, how long does it take to fill a pothole? They told us 7 to 10 days. Do we want to make that 20 to 30 days? Do we want to reduce the number of police officers that we have? Ironically, we can't do anything to the fire department because their contract has mandatory minimums in it, which will cost us more money in the long run. But again, the mayor has put out his proposal. Members of council have not rejected the expenditure component of it, but have rejected the revenue component of it. Again, no one, am I going to say it? I'm going to weigh it.
Everybody, just say it.
Everybody wants to go to heaven, but nobody wants to die. And so I say that in reality, because again, I have yet, as the chairman of the Committee on Budget and Government Operations, received a single reduction from any member of the city council.
So I want to jump in here. We as a city hired EY to do an assessment of everything. We spent $3.2 million. Matt's got the report right there. We get the report, and there's a lot of efficiencies in there. There's a lot of things that we can do that I think are really good ideas. And what do we want to do? We want to have EY in front of us to ask them questions. We couldn't get EY in front of us to ask them questions about efficiency. It took myself, Alderman O'Shea, and several other colleagues to file for an emergency meeting to be able to bring EY before us. That is just counterintuitive. I mean, that doesn't even make sense to me. So we finally get EY in the room, and we were able to ask some questions. We have only implemented $75 million worth of efficiencies in the budget from the EY report, and the EY report gives like $1 billion worth of efficiencies. We've gone back through the chair, and we're waiting on a lot of responses, but we need to look at vacancies. We need to look at fleet optimization. We need to look at our real estate. I want to see that. Like, I think we deserve to really comb through that and go back and work with the administration. I think we look there and start there.
Look, I also think that we've had this conversation several times. Our budget director has been before us. She's talked about the EY report. We've had EY in front of us, yes, due to a letter that you put forward. We'll acknowledge that. And we've also understood that there are efficiencies that cannot be implemented right away, that we will see those cost savings over time. Meanwhile, we have a little over 30 days to pass a budget for the upcoming year. And so we have to get to work now. to the question around cuts, look, what do you want to see? We have a federal government that's cutting Medicaid for millions of people who won't know where to get their medicine from so that they can stay alive. We have an administration that's made mass cuts to HUD. We had individuals who had partial deposits for their SNAP benefits. We have families right now in my ward who are extremely worried about how they're going to afford their mortgage after this last property tax bill that just hit their mailboxes on Friday. The reality is that we have to figure out how do we build a city that allows everyone to live in it. And every single year, not just due to the city, I'll acknowledge there's other levels of government that contribute to this, but we're starting to build a city that our families can no longer afford to live in. And so we have to look at a budget and decide who are we passing this budget for. And when I look at the budget and I am saying that this is a moral statement for who I represent, there are things in that budget that I'm unwilling to cut. Young people depend on summer jobs so that they can stay safe in some of the months of the year that are the most dangerous for them. We have individuals who do gang intervention and prevention so that our parks and schools could be safe. We have folks who depend on gender-based violence resources so that they could come out of situations that are the difference between life and death. We need to continue to build affordable housing in a city that's rapidly gentrifying at the center and pushing people out. And so when we're talking about efficiencies, I'm uncomfortable supporting efficiencies that I know when I go back to my ward, I will see the impact.
I couldn't agree with you more. I live on the west side of Chicago. I live in the 11th district, probably one of the most violent police districts in the city of Chicago. But what I saw this year, my phone does not ping as much from the shootings and the violence because we've got workers. I see we have also here. I saw IMVC here. These are the people that are actually out here helping to drive down the violent crime that is in our community. They are doing a great task and a great work. We had the safest summer that we've had in numbers of years. We
over 60. People, over 60.
60. Young people working, doing the things that when I came up that we didn't have some of those similar challenges. So, again, this is what the battle is going to be over. Do we wish to cut out the programming that is causing the decreased numbers in violence throughout our city? Or do we want to not ask corporations and others to chip in just a little more in order to make that a reality? Because, again, the number one thing everyone talks about is safety. No one's talking about taxes. People are talking about safety so they can have an environment. And when the 11th district is safe, that means that Mount Greenwood is safe. That means that Forest Glen is safe. Because believe it or not, when my folks get upset, guess where they're going? Guess where they're going? They're going to get the money. And so, again, to the extent that we can keep people in a safe space, engaged, doing what they need to do, working together, I believe that it is a small price to pay so that we can continue to move in this downward trend on keeping our young people safe, keeping our violence down, and giving our young people a better opportunity to see things that they otherwise would not see. Because, again, we are seeing the decreases, and the numbers don't lie. The numbers, they just don't lie.
I think it's important to add when we talk about public safety is it's no secret that in recent years, morale on the Chicago Police Department was at an all-time low. People were leaving the job in record numbers. We were having a hard time getting people to apply for the job. But the work that Superintendent Larry Snelling has done to bring up morale and get these officers willing to put themselves potentially in harm's way, where everybody you go, every situation you address, someone's filming you.
True.
Now, to some, that might not sound like a big deal, but I represent more members of law enforcement and first responders across the board than any other community. And it's real. These officers feel they're being supported. They're not only being supported, they're being held accountable by the superintendent. And I think that is helping the situation where we're seeing significant reductions in crime, particularly in those most dangerous neighborhoods. I also think some credit needs to go to the state's attorney's office, where we're seeing repeat gun offenders being held accountable and being held. I am frequently at 26th in California standing with victims of violent crime. And yes, I have violent crime in the 19th ward. I think that also needs to be recognized.
You have violent crime out there.
Okay, back to the budget. So I didn't hear any major cuts that would balance out. And to me, that leads me to believe that property tax is really the only major solution if the head tax is not coming back or if it's not coming back in a full capacity. Are we going to see a property tax?
It's absolutely unacceptable to impose a property tax in the city budget. It is absolutely unacceptable. There are people in my ward who have seen a 40 to 60% increase from one budget bill to another. That is the difference between someone staying and putting their house up for sale. But this is not just going to impact homeowners. Let's be real. I represent a ward with an overwhelming majority of 2 to 4 flats. That's going to trickle down to renters. When a small landlord has to keep up with those property taxes and the bills, guess who's going to see the increase? Individuals who are renewing their lease. And so property taxes in this moment are extremely unacceptable, particularly for rapidly gentrifying communities across the southwest side and the northwest side where individuals are already moving out. I see more for sign sales in my ward than I see in most communities around me.
I'll add this. This may not be a very popular statement. While I think I'm the last member of the Daley class of aldermen, I was appointed by Mayor Daley in the term before he left. One thing that we did not do was adequately keep up with revenue. If you look at the amount of our tax levy today versus what it was then, we have said that, and it's something I said, we'll either take an escalator or an elevator. And we have consistently taken an elevator. And we have continued to put shock on our residents every time we've had to make a move. I think it was Jill that showed me, our CFO, that had we stayed on just a regular path of CPI-related increases just to keep pace with inflation, that our tax bills would be the same as they are today. However, we would still own the Chicago Skyway. We still own our parking meters because we have made decisions in the moment to satisfy the need not to touch what many of us believe to be the third rail of politics, which is property tax increases. And so we have artificially bound ourselves to a policy that may not in the future be the best path to go. Now, in the moment, we all will say, hey, no, we don't want to do that. And again, we have, as a council, have signed on and passed ordinances for annual inflationary related increases. But every year we have walked away from those things, from the political consequences thereof. Again, I opened this up with a tax rate of 6%. You sit your house anywhere else in Cook County, I guarantee your tax bill is at least double, in some cases triple, because of our, I will say, I won't call it artificially low, but again, every time we do this, we add shock to our residents by taking this elevator approach, on top of the fact that we had I don't know what this COVID adjustment was, that yo-yoed taxes down and then shot them back up again. Many of my residents in West Garfield Park in North Lawndale are seeing the tremendous impact, not only of the yo-yoing of the lowering, but also the reassessment in many cases where those property values have increased some twofold. And again, people are seeing that same sticker shock that Alderman Fuentes just spoke of. So again, these are challenging things, and we as policymakers have to ultimately step in and make some sound fiscal decisions in order to keep the city afloat.
So I'd love to hear from each of you on that property tax front. Alderman Nugent, Alderman O'Shea, crystal ball, are at the end of the day, end of the year, I guess, will there be a property tax increase?
I don't think so, and I sure hope not. I don't think it's the right decision right now, and I think it sort of plays into the bigger conversation when we're talking about head taxes and PPLT. if we want our property tax bills to be lower, we need more businesses to come into Chicago and fill in the commercial real, you know, the commercial real estate that's empty right now. And in the last census, when we were doing the maps, a lot of our wards lost population. We need to get people back into the city to pay into that. And so I don't foresee a tax increase. I mean, anything's possible. The mayor made it very clear he'd veto. Well, I think he said he'd veto everything. But, you know,
he did.
thanks, Mayor. So we're going to have to go back to the well here. We've got to, I do think, like, I don't think that's the answer, but I think we have more commonality than I think we give each other credit for. Some things that we have talked about collectively as a council that we've supported. We restored funding into gender-based violence in libraries, and we care deeply about the moral compass of the city. I do believe in my heart of all hearts that there is money to be found in efficiencies. And I know my colleague spoke a bit about all the things we're going to, you know, potentially lose and cut. And I want to go back there for a minute. Looking at fleet optimization is not going to cut violence prevention workers. And going back to the well with procurement and really digging deep there. I mean, for example, I think the city, we have some contractors that have 8 contracts across the city. Why? They should have one master contract. We should not be having 8 contractors with one vendor across the city. So one department is spending more than the other. Like, this stuff is crazy to me. And I think that's the kind of digging I'm talking about, not the kind of things where we're laying people off that do essential services. And I just want to be very clear about that. Thank you.
But would you agree that that's something that's not instantaneous? That's something that will take time for us to get through. It may take more than 1 year to get through. And again, I think the points that ENY has made in this conversation, I think, are valid points, but they're not instantaneous decisions that we can make, cancel, and move forward. That's all.
I would say yes and. Like, yes. Yes, some of this stuff is going to take several years, and I think that's a good thing, because our budget next year, surprise, is going to be worse than the budget we have this year. And I think we're looking at vacancies and supervisor to staff ratio and some things that might take a little time. And I looked through that EY report and thought, we need to hone in on procurement yesterday. We could do some of the stuff procurement this year, and then sure, let's course correct next year and for the years following. But I do not think we have done enough on this year. And I, of course, think that a lot of the recommendations will take a bit of time.
A property tax increase is not going to happen. I'd like to point out this mayor a year ago this week proposed a $300 million property tax increase.
That was voted down 50-0.
He wanted it. We stopped it. So, yeah, we stopped it last year. So I believe there's more in the EY report that we can use. It was about 75 to 80 million in cuts. I think there's another 20 or 30 that we could find in here. And that's not the folks that fill potholes, and that's not the people that pick up your garbage. That's in some of the other 28 departments. I think we need to bring our department heads back in and try to identify what more they can find. Now, that's not going to solve the problem. But before I go back to the people in the 19th ward and say, you got to give some more, we're going to borrow some more, we're going to tax you some more, we're going to charge you some more fees, I need to be able to look them in the eye and say, I did everything I could to work with my colleagues to lessen the burden, to mitigate this problem. And what we have right now, it's not enough. And of course, in this report, much of this is 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years out. But there's more we can do. There's more low-hanging fruit now we can identify. I am 100% against the property tax increase. My phone's been ringing off the hook. Some people in my neighborhood think that I'm the guy that sends out the property tax bills.
So, Alderman, are you saying you could possibly support the community safety service?
I heard that come out. You heard it here
at City Club first,
there.
Folks.
It sounded like he was getting there.
I'd like to point out we've had the business community funding that initiative. How much have they raised?
$150 million.
So to those of you in the room, there are any at all involved in that, thank you. That's a great start.
Yeah, the Civic Committee really stepped up on that, and we talked about it here at City
Club. And Dan, not enough has been said about that. We hear about the ultra-rich. We hear about the billionaires. Much of this is affecting mid-sized businesses.
So, okay, we don't have too much time. Is it a new day for city council? I heard the mayor again and again say, please step up, share your ideas, right? Alderman Irvin, you mentioned Mayor Daley, those budgets in the past. People stepped up in those moments to come up with creative ideas to avoid these third rails. So now you can look back and say they were, you know, they're unpopular, but they got everybody through that year and invested, and some of that money is still being invested. Are there new ideas happening now? The mayor's made it clear. I don't know if he's listening, but he's made it clear that he's open to new ideas. There are 50 city council members. You have all sorts of constituents and a very much engaged civic community. Are there any new ideas? Is there anything that we haven't seen or heard of yet that can help get us over this hurdle?
I'll say this. Everything that has been put on the table, we can go back to the EY report. The EY report said we could raise, I think it was $60 to $120 million by moving to a point-of-sale liquor tax, right? Now, put that on the table. Oh, sounds like a great idea. The lobbyists show up. Oh, no, we can't do that. Every single item that is referenced has a pain point somewhere. At the end of the day, we have to make a decision as to what is going to be in the best interest of all, not necessarily in the best interest of a small minority of individuals. While I agree and understand the challenges that we face, and business has this, people have that, at some point we've got to ultimately make decisions and call balls and strikes. And again, there have been some ideas that have been put on the table. The garbage fee increase, and it was one, which people know that I hate. It was the only budget I voted against in my 15 years as being an alderman that I think unfairly penalized homeowners. But be that as it may, everything has a plus and a minus to it. The property tax system in the state of Illinois needs some adjusting. It needs some fixing. What we're seeing, the yo-yoing of tax bills and tax rates in various municipalities is something that's just untenable. I do believe that some level of smoothing needs to occur to prevent these huge swings in taxes, something that we do in the pension lane. If you get a great year of returns, you don't count them all 1 year, just as if you get a great year of losses, they don't get counted all in 1 year. Our system needs some reform because our people ultimately need some relief, as well as we have to find sustainable revenue sources. Many of these sources that have been coming to the table have been one-time fixes. Even had a suggestion to start selling naming rights of O'Hare Airport. And again, these are things that are one-time fixes. They don't get us where we need to go. We cannot continue to surplus TIF at the same level that we're doing it. Again, that's going to create another challenge down the road. So we have to find sustainable annual revenue that you and I can depend on to make sure that we can fund the priorities of the city, which include making sure our police and firefighters are adequately taken care of, our community safety is taken care of, and all of the needs that make Chicago as great as it is. However, those things come at a cost, and we must find a stable revenue source to deal with that in order to make sure that we function the way that we do.
Okay. We've made some progress, I think. We have 3 minutes. I always want to get at least one question in. Could I get someone? I know there was one or two that had my, I'm going to move over here to Jackie Gomez. Let's make sure this mic works.
Thank you. Thank you again. As always, very insightful conversation. Jackie Gomez, Executive Director with the Hispanic American Construction Industry Association. We've been around for about 46 years representing over nearly 300 minority, small, diverse businesses within the construction industry. So think architects, engineers, contractors. A lot of our members do a lot of work with the city of Chicago. One potential suggestion might be low-hanging fruit or not, because as you said, Alderman Irving, there's always a pain point somewhere. One area that we identify that potentially can help is there's a Prompt Payment Act that if vendors were to get paid a little sooner, especially in construction, because what's happening is they're accessing lines of credit and they're financing in order to get paid while they wait from the city. I have vendors members 6 months out waiting to get paid on services.
You're absolutely correct. One thing that we asked the comptroller, the city has to dot every I and cross every T before the comptroller releases a check. Now, the reality is that the bill is, somebody gives you a bill, let's say it's $100,000. We know we owe something. Now, is it $100,000, $101,000, $99,000? We owe something. And one thing that we have suggested to the comptroller is that, hey, is there a way when the invoice comes in and we say we give you 75% of the money while the rest of the bill is trued up? Because, again, you're right. We pay the interest cost because you know you're not going to get your money for 60, 90, 120 days. You're artificially padding that into your bid and into your cost. So we are definitely exploring options to help bring in the cash. It's not as if we do not have the money. We have the money. It's just that we're going through an arcane process. And I know that our budget director is shaking her head because a lot of this is systems related. We've been in a long process on an enterprise resource planning system so that we can do some of the things that everybody else is doing so we can actually bring down the cost. We hear this all the time from contractors, how much time it takes to get paid. And again, we pay that through inflated rates. I agree with you 100% on that.
I'd love to do more questions. I'm sorry. I respect everybody's time too much. There's so much going on in the city. So I think, and especially now since there's no vote tomorrow, that perhaps we could do a part two and maybe a few other of your colleagues. I really think that, and I think there are maybe ideas here, and hopefully this helped everyone get a better understanding and perhaps call your alderman, call your alderwoman, call the mayor's office if you have any ideas, because we need it. We all want to get this passed and move the city forward. So we at City Club appreciate civil dialogue, and this was a great example of that. Not everyone agrees on everything, and we're not getting anywhere if everybody just agreed. And we have a little fun along the way, right? So I do appreciate that, and I appreciate your efforts, your leadership, all four of you and all of your colleagues in and outside of this room. There's a lot more to come, and we'll be looking to you for that leadership and appreciate those ideas and appreciate having the civic community as part of the discussion. So thank you. Thank you, Alderman Fuentes. Thank you, Alderman O'Shea. Alderman Nugent, Alderman Irvin. As I said, there's so much more to come. Give me 1 minute. Not 1 minute. I'll take 30 seconds. Because, yes, Matt, go ahead.
Can we get a selfie with Donovan Pepper?
A selfie with Donovan Pepper is an absolute must. We've got to make sure that Cozen O'Connor's membership is current. And if not here, you can come back. Next week, it's 2 weeks. We have Cook County State's Attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke. We've got Speaker Chris Welch coming on January 6th. We have the Chancellor of University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana, on January 8th. Kristen Reynolds, the President and CEO of Choose Chicago, on January 13th. Cook County President Tony Preckwinkle on January 27th. And the Commissioner, Michael McMurray, of the Chicago Department of Aviation on February 5th. It's going to be a busy season coming up. And by the way, that's just what's out now. There are a few that we're talking about that are going to come up even sooner, including a couple of holiday events. So that's just what we've got going now. There's a lot more to discuss. We love your ideas. Please keep them coming. We love your guidance as we build these panels, and we also love your membership because this is what the city needs now. Keep all of you getting together and making stuff happen to move the city forward. So thank you for that. Thank you all for being here and for your efforts in the next month.